Hello, this is Josh Carr at Real Angle, and today we're speaking with Kim Lockridge, Executive VP, Vice President at Engineered Tax Services. Pardon me. Great way to start. Kim, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Josh. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm doing well, thank you. Glad you could join me and talk about technical stuff. I always like getting into the weeds on things, this should be good. So let's start with some basics. So you're at Engineered Tax Services. What does ETS do? How long have you been there? Little bit of background.
Yeah, thanks for asking me. I'm Kim Lockridge from Engineered Tax Services. Engineered Tax Services is a specialty tax firm. We've been in business since 2001, so we're going on 23 years now. We're a specialist in the specialty tax space. And what that means is, the specialty taxes are the products that typically CPAs don't normally do. They need to have a third-party certifier in order to do something that will generate some tax incentives or tax deductions. In this case, we're talking about cost segregation, which needs to be coming from an engineering standpoint, which CPAs normally don't do. Right. But we also do research and development tax credits, 179D certifications, 45L certifications, anything having to do with engineering and tax. That's what we specialize in.
And out of curiosity, so are you an accountant by trade? Like, what's your background? What were you doing before?
Yeah, I've been in finance and accounting my whole life. So I've been doing this for a long time. I've been with ETS for 15 years. And, I've been an entrepreneur most of those years before that. So I've been run businesses and, been on the finance and accounting and tax side in all of them.
I guess I just love the idea that there's something that's too technical for CPAs that they have to call in other CPAs. I think that's wonderful. Because, to most of us who are not accountants by training, we already look at the CPAs like they do some dark wizardry that we don't understand. Yeah. So for them to say, well, no, we have to bring in the special wizard because, our magic potions are not doing it, I find amusing. But I think what you said is interesting in that it's where engineering becomes part of the conversation and third-party certification. So let's talk a little bit about what is cost segregation, because I think that's what we're going to talk about first.
Yeah. Cost segregation is a very valuable tool for real estate owners. I think if anyone owns real estate, they'll hopefully be familiar with their depreciation schedules and know that the assets get depreciated. For commercial property, it's 39 years. And for residential property, it's 27 and a half years. So it depreciates over that period of time, and over, the purchase price gets delineated over those, carved out years. And then that goes against your income so that you get some additional tax deductions. So most people end up getting some deductions that are nice, that some people who, haven't been in real estate don't realize that they actually get to write off their property. And as it deteriorates, right, then also you have the depreciation. But essentially cost segregation comes in. And instead of depreciating the whole building or the whole asset under one category, like building or improvements, right? Those types of things, we have the ability to carve out certain assets. And instead of depreciating one whole building, we're depreciating the different systems of the building, the HVAC system, the roof, the flooring, the finishes, the electrical, the, landscaping, right? All those types of things. And the IRS dictates to us, if you delineate those assets, then you can actually put them in faster buckets, which means that you get to depreciate them maybe over 5 years or 15 years rather than 27 and a half or 39.
Right.
And the reason the IRS allows us to do this is because they realize that those assets aren't designed to last any longer than that. You should never depreciate your flooring over 39 or 27 and a half years. It's never going to last that long. So they allow us to put it in this bucket. The problem is when you buy a new building, you don't know how much that flooring is worth or how much that roof is worth. And so you need to have an engineer or a specialist come in and delineate all those assets to prove to the IRS what was there. And essentially that's what cost seg is we're reallocating assets into faster buckets.
Now, you've said a few things that I find are interesting. I mean, I think the first thing is just even that things can be delineated. I mean, that just starting from that fact, and that some of this is, you know, some of it is that things age faster than others, but also some of this is just a matter of, I don't say capriciousness, but it's a product of law. I mean, the fact that residential depreciates at one rate and commercial depreciates at the other, that's just because the law says so, not because it actually disintegrates. I mean, something I've always found amusing about cost segregation conversations is, you know, landscaping depreciates at a relatively fast rate, and only accountants would think a 10-year-old tree was worthless, you know, whereas to me, you know, bigger trees are usually better than smaller trees. I mean, if given the option of having large majestic oaks on my property or saplings, I'm going with majestic oaks. But, you know, again, that's just sort of the nature of the beast. So if you're doing cost segregation and you're going out there and you're doing some sort of delineation, who's doing that? Who is actually the guy who or the gal who does that part of the job?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we've been doing this, as I mentioned, for a long time. And, you know, over the past, you know, I think really since 2017, when bonus depreciation hit, which I'm sure we'll probably get into talking about bonus depreciation at some point. You know, when bonus depreciation, well, bonus depreciation has actually been around since 2006. Okay. But it was enhanced and expanded in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act by Trump.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the bonus depreciation.
Okay.
Back up a little. So what do you mean when you say bonus depreciation?
So a bonus depreciation is a result of doing a cost seg study. So essentially, you have to do a cost seg study in a sense in order to get bonus depreciation. And what happens when we're delineating the asset of the building and we say, okay, this portion of the building goes into a 5-year bucket. This portion of the building goes into a 15-year bucket, right? And then this portion, like structural things like windows and doors, HVAC systems, standard electrical, those types of things actually have to stay in the long asset, the 39 or 27 and a half year. And so we delineate those assets. But as a result of that, what that means when you put something into a 5-year class life or a 5-year bucket, that means that you're now going to take the total cost of that asset and depreciate that over 5 years or 15 years, respectively. The bonus depreciation kicks in and says anything that you've reclassified into a faster class life that's 20 years or less, meaning the 5 and 15 year property, you can now take that in accordance with the bonus depreciation. Okay. So we had 100% bonus depreciation for used property or purchases from 2017 through 2022. Okay.
Okay.
That meant that 100% of that 5 and 15 year bucket or class life now gets to be depreciated all in year one. You don't have to wait 5 or 15 years for it. You get it all right now. And the benefit to that is huge because you have just massive abilities to structure your taxes and do it well to the tune of really writing off, you know, the majority of your income.
Right. So once you move it into the 5-year bucket, basically now not only is it in the 5-year bucket, but now you're saying forget about even taking it over 5 years. You're just taking it now.
That's correct. Yeah. And then now we're kind of in a scaling period. It's called the sunsetting period. So in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, there was set a sunsetting for this, which meant, you know, essentially that as according to these rules, starting in 2023, you know, like I said, you have 100% bonus from, you know, from 2017 through 2022. In 2023, we're going to scale that down. And now you're going to get 80% bonus. And that means that of those class lives, I want to be really clear about this because there are so many myths and misconceptions out there that your bonus depreciation is going to be a percentage of the entire building, right? That's not the case unless you're talking about a gas station or a car wash. So just
where everything's basically machinery at that point is what you're saying.
Right.
That's essentially what you're saying, right? Things that are machinery heavy.
Right.
Okay.
So basically what's happening is we have to make sure that we understand that the listeners understand that the bonus appreciation applies to the 5 and 15 year assets, not the entire building, right? So it's mostly a percentage. And in 2023, that scales down to 80%. 2024, it goes down to 60%, 2025, 40, and it just deletes, 20% of it. So you're not losing. It's the same depreciation. That's what I want to make sure and get that out there.
It's just whether or not you get the depreciation now or later, basically.
Yeah. So now it's like you get 60% of it up front. The other 40% gets delineated between the 5 and 15 year assets. That's all that's happening here. Right. You're not losing it. You just don't get it all up front. So it's not as powerful as a tax strategy planning tool as it was when it was 100 or 80%. And now since we're hitting 2024, we're in that 60% bonus depreciation for anything that's in service in 2024.
Well, and your point, which I think is interesting, is also talking about, we kind of touched on it about product types, that certain kinds of products have more machinery than others, or more different class lives than others. I mean, in a prior life, I was on the board of a public company that did a lot of industrial and warehouse facilities. And obviously with industrial, if you've got a lot of machinery, the value of a factory, the box isn't really the value. It's all the gear inside of the box, right? So obviously that's going to have a lot of accelerated depreciation, whereas just a warehouse that has no gear in it, well, it's a warehouse. Like there's really nothing you can segregate out because, I guess landscaping, but there's not much.
There could be some electrical. There could be, electrical in the floors that are specialty. Really is going to depend on the reason for the asset. Because we can, just because it's electrical doesn't mean it has to be in a 39-year asset. Electrical can be delineated even in itself. And that's another caveat that a lot of kind of newer cost seg companies are popping up and they just throw electrical in the bucket. You're not, unless you do it. So there's just a whole myriad of different, cautions out there. But if you're not doing it from an engineered standpoint, you can't break down and delineate the mechanical, the electrical and plumbing. So it has to be an engineered based. What we have right now is these kind of hybrid companies that are coming out and saying, okay, we're going to do a cost seg study. It's going to be an engineer based cost seg. We're not going to do a site visit, or we're going to do a virtual site visit, or we're going to delineate this, but we're not an engineer. Right. And so there's very convoluted in the market right now. So somewhat difficult.
And I guess the danger there, not to get ahead of ourselves here, but I, as the taxpayer at the end of the day, are ultimately responsible for paying my taxes. Right. Okay. So if I get a study that is subpar, and now it gets challenged by the IRS and we have an audit and blah, 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 and I lose, I'm still the one paying, basically.
Right. And so the IRS has been very verbal about that. In fact, we had, our annual cost seg conference where we had the Department of Treasury come talk to us about how they're auditing cost seg studies.
Cool.
And there are so many ill players in the marketplace popping up, probably because these haven't really been looked at and been audited for very heavily. They really haven't. So ill players are breeding in the space. And so basically what happens is the IRS is just going to throw the report out. If there wasn't a site visit, the only reason the virtual site visit was allowed was during COVID. Well, folks were outside of COVID.
Sure, exactly.
You can get in a car.
Yeah.
These companies are trying to get super funny and super smart and elongate this whole COVID thing and say, oh, well, we can do a virtual site visit because then they can open up their business to do studies everywhere in the country, whereas before they were limited to their space. Well, that doesn't really work. You have to do a site visit if you're going to do an engineer-based study. It is required by the IRS. And they say that if you do a virtual site visit, unless you can prove that there was a reason why you physically could not be at that property, they will just throw out the whole report. They're not going to go in and redo the report for you. They're just going to be like, we're not going to accept it,
Right, which is obviously, And it's interesting. I think sometimes people see the IRS as this monolith and what have you, but I don't want to say it was – I understand Treasury Department's attitude of why they came to a conference like that. It's like, look, they don't want to deal with throwing out reports and having fights. They just want to collect the taxes and be done with it.
Right.
They have a job to do too. And if they can do it in a less painful way by saying to you service providers, do this, don't do that, everybody wins. Happy clients, happy government people. No,
yeah.
I get it. I did a bunch of consulting years ago on some stuff for the federal EPA, and my main takeaway from it is look, they want to leave the office at a reasonable hour too. They don't want to make things more painful than it needs to be. So let's all play our role and do
So
what you
you
need to do.
so the bottom line is, you know, do it right. Make sure that you're not cutting corners. Make sure you're not, you know, you're not going to do you're going to do a virtual site visit because you're going to save $500 or $1,000 or something on the study, which, you know, essentially what's going to happen anyways is you're just going to walk over dimes or walk over dollars to pick up dimes.
Right. Yeah. Well, and now let's talk about this. I mean, your firm, so who is doing the actual engineering study? Are you guys, so you guys are CPAs, you're tax people, is my understanding. So then the engineering work is done by like a third party that you hire? Is it done by your own people? How does that?
Yeah, no, we don't outsource the engineering. So our company is, our company is Engineered Tax Services. So we
it's
have CPAs
okay.
and engineers on staff.
Got it.
So we have engineers go to the site. We have engineers that rebuild the building on paper using construction software. So we're not just cherry picking. We're not going out there and doing a square foot analysis. You know, we're not doing a desktop study where we just sit at the desk and go da 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 da. You know, we're physically in the building and actually doing the study. So,
cool.
You know, that's really what sets us apart. We're doing it right. The IRS puts out and publishes what's called an audit technique guideline. It's very familiar to CPAs. They put out these guidelines for specific things that might come in a tax return on how to audit them, and that's how they use. They use these to train their auditors on how to audit these. So,
sure.
Of course, we get our hands on the audit technique guideline and we devour this, right? That's our business. Anytime there's changes to that, we know exactly what they're looking for. So we have these. And in fact, it's very interesting that in the audit technique guideline, it says, so not using acronyms, but the IRS specifically says that the MACRS methodology, MACRS, is the terminology that in tax language that we use for determining that we're doing this based on cost seg and not doing it based on straight line depreciation. Okay. So there's two different methods.
Got it.
And so they actually say in the audit technique guideline that the MACRS methodology is the preferred method by the IRS because it's more accurate, right? They don't really want you throwing a building on a depreciation schedule for 39 years, the entire building straight line, because it's not accurate. And how many times do you do improvements to that property? And then you have to put on, you know, let's say you buy a property and that includes a roof. And then 5 years later, you put on a new roof. If you're doing straight line depreciation on the original purchase and then you capitalize a whole new roof, you're now depreciating two roofs. I'm sorry, but that's not accurate. You shouldn't be depreciating two roofs. You need to remove the first roof. But if nobody knows what the value of what that roof was in the original, then you can't do that.
No, and I've had conversations like that with leasehold improvements. You know, I do a build out for a restaurant and then their lease comes to an end and then we got to gut the restaurant. It's like, okay, well, you know, the build out's gone. It's gone. Like, and now we do a new build out. You can't just do build outs on build outs. Like that's not actually what's going on here. So,
it's not accurate. So a cost segregation actually keeps your bookkeeping in line with what's actually going on in the property itself, right? It's mirroring the activity. So when you Right. So when you have a cost seg study and you do improvements and you actually delineate those improvements, you can go through and I can read those depreciation schedules like a novel. I love them because it really tells me a story of what's happening on that building, when, where, why, how, and how they did it. You know?
Yeah, so a lot of people are new to this stuff. They don't appreciate the fact that that like there's accounting for tax and then there's accounting for accounting, and that they don't tie out necessarily. Like that's just not the way it works. And that gets me to another topic, which I was going to ask you about, is government changes the rules periodically. You mentioned the 2017 Tax Act, which, what was the final title for that thing? It was the
Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017.
Yeah, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Thank you.
Yeah.
I remember, and I don't want to get into politics because then everybody gets angry, but I know at one point they had some goofy title for it. The Trump administration is throwing it around. They were going to call it like the cut act or something like that. They had some pithy name for it. And then cooler heads prevailed and were like, that's just goofy. Like you can't, you know, you need to give it a real name. You can't call it the cut act. That just sounds silly. But anyway, so nonetheless, putting aside that, because invariably no matter what you say anymore, you piss someone off. So that act, when it got passed, that was the last major reform of this sort of stuff. what I know there have been other things along the way. Like I remember during the Obama administration, they had like accelerated depreciation for solar panels. I know going back to George Bush, back to W, there was a thing where they played with like oil and pipeline depreciation, which again, no surprise. They change the rules periodically. So how does that affect you guys? And does stuff get grandfathered in? Like what's that look like?
Yeah, so we are very close to the politics as far as this goes. I'm personally on the tax committee for the Real Estate Roundtable in Washington, D.C. That is the largest real estate lobbying group in the country, and collectively, the members own 72% of all real estate in that group. So it's very, very impressive that that group. We have a lot of pull in that space. Every 3 months, I'm at Capitol Hill meeting with congressmen and senators, and speaking with them about what we're seeing in the market. The changes are something that usually when they come down, they don't surprise us because we've been involved in the bills and the writing of them and the massaging of some of the wordage and whatnot. But obviously the IRS ultimately in Congress still makes their decisions, and they'll make decisions that come down the pipeline, but we have an idea of what's coming. After the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, we had the CARES Act, where we had the PPP loans, and we had all the, all that other stuff. And then we had the IRA bill, right? So the Inflation Reduction Act. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act works so well, that we were on a trajectory of inflation that was so high that, hey, now we have to turn that off. Now we have to go back the other direction. Right. So it's this give and take, teeter totter all the time. We are very close to the Department of Treasury, have a great relationship with them. We have a seriously fantastic track record when it comes to audits in the marketplace
That's
with
great.
these studies. And this is something that we work very hard to stay knowledgeable. So anytime there's a change that's coming down or that is been delivered, that's the first thing we do is take days and sometimes weeks to devour what the changes are to make sure that we're incorporating those. A lot of people don't do that. It's just like doctors. When you have doctors and that are practicing, some of them just get a little bit lazy. And when there's new procedures out there, they just kind of go, oh, I'm just going to wait until I hear enough about it to where I can incorporate it. But they're not on that cutting edge in some cases. And then other ones are right there on the cutting edge, and that you're going to get the best. But not everybody knows everything, right?
No, I have a relative of mine who was a surgeon. He's passed away, and he basically stopped being a surgeon when he felt that he was unable to keep up effectively with what he needed to still keep up on because he got older. And it wasn't that his hands weren't still, as still and as capable as they needed to be. He just said, if I can't keep up, I'm just not serving my patients. So I'm going to go play golf. Like, and that was that.
And it's commendable because it does happen. People get kind of stuck in their ways, and CPAs are no different. Love CPAs. That community is fantastic, and they need to be supported. There's a really difficult tidal wave coming for CPAs, and so we want to make sure that they get supported and that you're treating your CPA with some respect
In
because
what
they
way?
do a
In
very
what way?
difficult job.
In what way are you seeing a tidal wave coming? Because I think I know what you're alluding to, but what's on your mind?
So CPAs, the industry is really challenged right now in the United States. So essentially, right now, 70% of all CPAs will be retired in the next 10 years.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were going to say. Yeah, okay. It's staffing. They can't get people.
They
They can't
can't.
get people.
And there aren't enough young people coming into the industry. So we talk about this a lot. I had a snippet on a, I had a snippet of a Instagram of a show that I recorded that, speaking of those statistics went out, and I was talking about supporting your CPA. And I think we ended up having 4 million hits or something because
Sure.
it went out into the community and they were like, please, please listen to this, but anyways, it is going to be very challenging. So, don't drop your taxes on your CPA at the last minute and expect them to be done in 2 days. Gone are those days. Taxes are so complicated and there's so many moving parts to it. Just make sure and have some respect for your CPA because they are overworked, underpaid, and there's just not enough of them. So
No, and
I
the
will tell you
staffing.
right now, if you don't take care of your CPA, they will fire you because the biggest conversation that I'm having at CPA conferences is how our CPAs are going to get rid of their C&D clients.
Right. Because
you know, if you're a crappy client, then you're just going to be like, sorry, I can't do your taxes this year. So you can drop it on me 2 days before, but I'm not going to be able to get it done. So
right.
There you go.
As a service provider, I can either raise my rates or call my clients, either one. Yeah, no. And it's a fair point. I mean, if you don't have enough people entering the industry, you don't have staffing, and then you just can't get the job done, which, you know, it's similar, frankly, in the construction trade. I mean, not to get off topic, construction trades are the same problem. You know, people are not raising their kids and saying, you know, junior, I want you to grow up to be an electrician. You know, whereas
yeah, go lay tile.
Generations, you know, every electrician I've ever met does very well for themselves. Like they get good rates. They're doing just fine. It's a real staffing challenge. Apparently, we all. We have a generation that all want to be influencers, but, you know, c'est la vie. Anyway, so this is interesting. So the rules keep changing, which, you know, again, one of the reasons I bring this up and I threw out a few things is this is something that I, as an industry professional who owns stuff and who raise money for deals and what have you, like, you know, I know enough about cost segregation to be dangerous. I know the rules change and I hear about them because I talk to people, but I'm not. You know, my finger is not on the pulse because that's not what I do. So I wanted to talk about that. And I think that's something that a lot of people who are new to this don't fully appreciate is, you know, some of the changes are for practical reasons, like the lifespan of things. And some of them are just periodically Congress just changes the rules of the game. And sometimes they benefit us and sometimes they don't. And, you know. Shrug. That's politics. I mean,
yeah, that's exactly right. And on that topic, actually, there is a bill that has been written and submitted to bring back the 100% bonus depreciation through 2026. So it might change again. You know, I mean, you never know. We might get that back. And here's what's interesting about depreciation. It's the same money. You're not getting any more depreciation or any less depreciation than you would have. It's the same money. And cost segregation has been around since the 1940s. A lot of people think that cost segregation is bonus depreciation and it came about in 2017. Bonus depreciation has been around since 2006 and cost seg has been around since the 1940s.
Right.
So this isn't new, right? And here's what's interesting is the bonus depreciation, Congress has learned that they can turn it on and off to fit their needs. Now, think about that, because the 2006 bonus depreciation came out under Bush, and it has been a bipartisan thing because it isn't any more money. There's no money out of the pocket of the IRS by increasing bonus depreciation. It's the same money. It's just not over this certain period of time,
it's
right?
It's just timing of the money.
In the end,
it's timing.
In the end, it's the same money. But what's interesting is that the taxpayers can really strategically build their taxes around certain things like bonus depreciation. Now, what was interesting about 2017 is not only do we have, you know, a revolutionary, you know, bonus depreciation at 100%, we also have the short-term rental loophole for the material participation that everybody has been jumping on the bandwagon to be able to get that so that they can use their short-term rental depreciation to offset W-2 income. Two working households can have a second home in, you know, Tennessee and still live in California. And then they take the depreciation, the bonus depreciation, they get to offset their W-2 taxes. It's really a phenomenon right now. So take that. And now you understand why the Airbnb market has completely blown up, right? Because of these rules.
Because there are a lot of doctors who've all of a sudden said I could rent out my ski condo and offset the fact that I'm a pediatrician and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Right. And then you have the car washes. You know, think about this. You know, you can't tell me that you haven't seen a car wash popping up on every corner over the last 5 years. Right?
Well, and I was going to say what turned me on and one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about all of this is about a year ago, someone came to me with like a car wash deal 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I generally only invest in my own deals because that's kind of what I do. But, you know, he sent it to me and I was curious and he's a guy I know. So I'm like, sure, I'll look at your documents. And what was interesting about it was, you know, usually when you raise money, you say to someone, I'll give you a rate of return on your money and a split of the upside. That's just typical math. But in this case, it was, I'll give you a rate of return, a split of the money. But when we figure out the rate of return for you, instead of saying 8% cash on your investment, we're going to figure out the tax benefit you're going to get, because since this is really just tax driven, we're going to do all of our waterfall math off the tax, not off the cash. Right. And if you actually looked at the cash, these car washes weren't actually making money. What they were doing was generating huge amounts of tax benefits.
Right.
And if you understood it, and, you know, so the guy sent it to me and I looked at it. I said, look, I understand what you're doing. We'll call him John. I said, John, I understand what you're doing. And I get the math. The challenge is that to try to explain this to the average doctor or dentist, they're not going to be able to wrap their brains around this. Like, there's going to have to be a whole educational process just to even explain what you and I are talking about on the phone, you know?
That's
so I'm like,
exactly
great idea, but I just, you know, it's too sophisticated.
Yeah, you've got to really understand it, but that is in essence why the car washes are popping up, is because, you know, and, you know, along those lines, you know, I'm starting to see brand new gas stations. When was the last time you saw a brand new gas station built? You know, I mean, it just doesn't, it, you know, and
especially in a country, from what I could tell, if anything, we're moving towards EVs, you would think they'd be closing. Just looking at sales numbers, like I saw, I love data. I saw yesterday, I guess, for 2023, it was like 8% of all new sales were EVs. It's going up. You know, I don't know what the tipping point is, but at some point the gas stations start to close down. Like, that's just supply and demand.
Yeah,
it's,
so
it's weird.
It's been
weird.
Very interesting because, you know, and what I'm getting at with the whole bonus depreciation and Congress kind of turning it on and off at their leisure is that you think about, we're going into an election year. We are now in an election year as of 3 days ago.
Sure.
So when you have somebody who wants to get reelected and you have something like bonus depreciation that is starting to go away, which bonus depreciation is bipartisan, it doesn't matter whether you're a real estate president or if you're not. What matters is the fact that if you get people hyped up about bringing back 100% bonus depreciation, you're going to get votes.
Yeah, it's not a left wing or right. It's not left or right. It's if I give you money, you like me. Like,
exactly.
Just,
and it's not even there. And then the coolest part about it for Congress is then they're not giving away anything. It's the
They're just shifting the timing. They're shifting timing. Yeah.
But that's going to be a really big benefit. Yeah. And I, if I had a crystal ball, I would say that the bonus depreciation in this tax year will likely come back just because they're smart enough to realize what they can get from it. And you know, hey, there you go. I mean, I think they were putting it on the back burner until this year. So, you know, fingers crossed that it does come back, because I'm a real estate investor. I've been investing in real estate since the late 90s.
Sure.
So I understand the benefit of it. You know, my husband is our real estate professional. So we offset our depreciation, offset my income. And, you know, we do very well for ourselves in that manner. Real estate has been great to us. We're going to continue down that path.
No, it is interesting. I mean, it is definitely bipartisan. At the same time, one of the reasons I mentioned the thing about, you know, Obama with solar and, you know, George W. oil and gas, everyone likes bonus depreciation. It just then becomes a question of what it is you want to incentivize, you know, and that's where left and right, you know, like to be grumpy with each other, because one side likes this and the other side likes that. And that's just Congress being Congress, you know, so whatever, you know, that's just our political system at work.
Yeah.
No, it is interesting getting into how the sausage is made. His last couple questions on cost segregation, and then, you know, I've sort of went through what I want to talk about. So timeline wise, so let's say hypothetically I come to you tomorrow and I say, I've got this building and I want to hire you to do this kind of work. How long does it take you guys to work your magic, so to speak?
Our turnaround time is 6 weeks. We're contracted. We want to make sure that that's delivered. We don't miss tax deadlines. If you come to me on March 1st and you tell me you need it by April 15th, you know, we're going to be on a cusp, but.
And then you're going to tell me get an extension because.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, we do that, but if there's somebody that absolutely needs it for their shareholders, and they need it in 2 weeks, I can get it done. I charge an expedited fee, but I can get it done. I don't turn clients away. One thing that we pride ourselves on is the white glove service. We are responsive. A lot of cost ed companies get overloaded and they're not replying, you know, just like any other business, and it's sad, but We run, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, about 400 to 600 studies a month across the country. So we're doing this a large scale. We're only getting better. We're incorporating technology to help us keep that white glove service and be responsive and make sure that you're getting taken care of as a client. That's the most important thing for us.
And I guess, and my last question, so you're doing this throughout the United States, obviously, you know, all the states. Hawaii, Alaska, or is that not?
Puerto Rico, yeah.
Puerto Rico, everywhere. There you go. Right, that's U.S. tax system.
Yeah.
And I guess my last question.
We actually do international as well. We have a lot of clients that are investing in, they're a U.S. citizen investing in China, U.K., Australia, you know, any kind of Europe. So we have a lot of opportunities for those. They're still reporting those and depreciating those on a U.S. tax return. So we still do cross saves foreignly as well. And we have some partners, like the UK has very similar tax rules than we do. And so we actually have sister companies in UK and Australia that can do the cost-seg studies. So we don't have to fly anybody there. But we actually have partners and we do international cost-segs as well.
That's good to talk. I've done a little bit of international work. And it is interesting to me that once you get over the fact that, you know, we call it this and they call it that. There are only so many ways that government can squeeze pennies out of you and, you know, different words for the same thing at the end of the day. So it's good conversation. Well, look, this is great to go through. I know we're going to do another one where we talk about the IRA and Section 179D and 45L and all kinds of other stuff. But I think we've talked about cost segregation, what we need to talk about. So cool. So again, this has been Josh Carr speaking with Kim Lockrich at Engineered Tax Services. And one thing I always like to tell people, their web address, engineeredtaxservices.com. I find if I don't say that at least once, someone emails me to be like, where do I find these people? So again, engineeredtaxservices.com. Yeah. And Kim, we'll talk again shortly and we'll go over other stuff in another segment.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much for having me. And just if anyone does go to our website, please make sure and name Josh in there so that we can give him the recognition.
Thank you.
And also, you know, just let us know. We're always going to ask where you heard about us. So it's always better if you want to just shoot it over to me. My email address is actually on our team page if you want to do that, or at least put my name in the reference so that we can work together and I can help answer any questions you might have and just make sure that Josh is taken care of on that. So we really
appreciate that. And just for my listeners, I don't get a commission on this. I may ask Kim to send me a bottle of scotch or buy me a drink if he's in town. But no money will change hands. I try to be ethical on such things.
We really appreciate referrals and we like to at least at minimum, you know, send that bottle of scotch or send a thank you. So that's important for us.
I've built a wonderful collection over the years. It's amazing what you can do. So all good. And Kim, I'll see you again shortly.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Joshua. Have a good one.